EcoReport is a weekly public affairs program
providing independent media coverage
of environmental and ecological studies
with a focus on local, state, and regional people, issues, and events
in order to foster open discussion
of human relationships with nature and the earth
and to encourage you to take personal responsibility for living sustainably in the world.
EcoReport is produced by an independent team of volunteers
working at the studios of Community Radio WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana.
And financially supported by listeners like you.
Good morning and welcome to EcoReport. For WFHB, I'm David Lyman.
And I'm Phil Casper. Local environmentalists have announced the establishment of an encampment of forest and nature supporters opposing the DNR's proposed logging of the Low Gap Wilderness Area. Members of Mind the Gap, a group that has advocated for protection of this wilderness area for several months, have stated that the protest encampment will be peaceful and is being supported by landowners contiguous to the proposed logging tract, as well as donations by the public. Campers will watch over and protect the trees and habitat of Yellowwood State Forest from logging and destruction. The camp is expected to continue for days or weeks. Mind the Gap made their announcement on October 31st via Facebook and their contact list. The Indiana DNR plans to hold a public auction for Low Gap timber on November 9th.
The former reservoir Weimer Lake in Bloomington is scheduled to be demolished. The City of Bloomington's Utilities Department is currently taking bids from companies to remove the 20-foot-high, 200-foot-long dam in the city's southwest. Weimer Lake is situated in Wapahani Mountain Bike Park on the east side of Highway 37. The dammed reservoir was built in the early 1900s and is approaching the end of what Utilities Department staffers consider its lifespan. The project is expected to cost $500,000 and will begin next year. Current proposals for the area will significantly reduce the marine space occupied by the dam, replacing it with planted vegetation. The City of Bloomington currently draws water from the Lake Monroe Reservoir.
Utah Republican Rob Bishop recently introduced legislation that would invalidate the 1906 Antiquities Act. Under the bill, national monuments would be limited to 85,000 acres and require both county and state approval for any site larger than 10,000 acres. This would put all but the smallest sites on the chopping block. Randy Spivak, Public Lands Director at the Center for Biological Diversity, says the bill's impact is staggering. Quote, "This legislation is an appalling, unprecedented attack on our national monuments and public lands. The Grand Canyon, Grand Teton, Zion, and nearly every national monument created over the past 100 years wouldn't have been possible under Bishop's bill," end quote.
Under the so-called National Monument Creation and Protection Act, monuments could no longer be designated to protect natural or scientific wonders. Only objects of antiquity, relics, cultural artifacts, and fossils would be covered. Private landowners would also need to approve a national monument designation if their land bordered the proposed boundaries. Additionally, the bill would give presidents the authority to shrink existing national monuments. President Trump currently lacks the authority to change national monument designations or boundaries. Despite this, the president's administration wants him to shrink 4 national monuments: Utah's Bear's Ears and Grand Staircase Escalante, Nevada's Gold Butte, and Oregon's Cascade Siskiyou. Protections for these and 6 others would also be slashed.
The Standing Rock Sioux Tribe and protesters of the Dakota Access Pipeline experienced a significant win in court on October 11th. A federal judge found that approval of the pipeline violated the law. The Trump administration issued permits for the pipeline just a few days after the inauguration. The judge ruled that the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, quote, "did not adequately consider the impacts of an oil spill on fishing rights, hunting rights, or environmental justice, or the degree to which the pipeline's effects are likely to be highly controversial," unquote. The court left the pipeline operating and requested an additional briefing on the subject and a status conference for the next week. The nonprofit environmental law firm Earth Justice has filed a lawsuit criticizing the Army Corps of Engineers for issuing a permit for the pipeline's construction. They say the Corps was in violation of several state environmental laws.
On October 11, Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, or FERC, FERC, received over 10,000 comments opposing the Trump administration's plans for FERC to enact massive bailouts of the coal and nuclear industries at the expense of renewable energy, with the added downside of higher bills for consumers. The comments were submitted after an early morning protest organized by the Nuclear Information and Resource Service, or NIRS. NIRS noted that the stakes for wind, solar, and the wallets of U.S. ratepayers are very high. A November 2016 NIRS report concluded that a federal bailout for nuclear alone would add up to $280 billion by 2030. When a major nuclear reactor project in South Carolina failed this year, ratepayers were left holding the bag for $9 billion or more, even though they'll never see a single electron of electricity for their steep investment.
On November 9th, conservative think tank the Heartland Institute, based in Indiana, will host the America First Energy Conference in Houston. Speakers will include David Bernhardt, Deputy Secretary of the Interior, and Richard Westerdale of the U.S. Bureau of Energy Resources. The organizers tout the event as, quote, the first major conference to examine the administration's scrapping of the so-called Clean Power Plan, unquote. The Obama administration's Clean Power Plan, developed under the Public Health-Focused Clean Air Act, would have placed limits on power plant emissions for the very first time. U.S. power plants had, until that point, been allowed to produce unlimited amounts of harmful emissions and account for 35% of the country's total fossil fuel emissions. And Houston is the site of August's devastating Hurricane Harvey, a virtual showcase of the effects of climate change, from superstorm phenomena to compounded water and air pollution caused by the flooding of refinery facilities. These facilities regularly emit high levels of pollution as they process large amounts of oil from offshore drilling in the Gulf of Mexico.
The Senate Republicans' narrow passage of the 2018 budget plan opened the door for oil and gas drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Reserve. Past proposals to drill in the refuge have consistently failed, so this time Republicans simply attached the measure to the budget bill. The budget was passed through a legislative tool known as reconciliation, which only requires a simple majority rather than 60 votes. The budget was approved 51-49, with Kentucky Republican Senator Rand Paul joining Democrats in opposition. Drilling Arctic National Wildlife Reserve would raise revenue for Trump's tax plan that cuts taxes for the rich. ANWR, the largest protected area in the U.S., consists of more than 19 million acres of pristine landscapes and is home to 37 species of land mammals, 8 marine mammals, 42 fish species, and more than 200 migratory bird species. Earth Justice President Trip Van Noppen stated, quote, the budget passed by the Senate today sets in motion a sellout of some of our most iconic public lands and waters to the highest bidder in order to fund tax breaks for billionaires, end quote. He added, quote, this is a blatant attempt to use the budget reconciliation process to pass a divisive and controversial proposal that would lead us in the wrong direction on climate. Senate Democrats, led by Maria Cantwell of Washington, offered an amendment to the Senate's budget resolution that would block drilling in the Alaskan refuge, but the measure failed 48-52, mostly along party lines. There are other attempts at exploiting protected areas. There's an attempt to begin gold mining next to Yellowstone National Park. The runoff would enter the Yellowstone and Missouri rivers. Secretary Zinke recommends that Giant Sequoia National Monument in California be reduced in size to permit logging. There's an attempt to open a coal strip mine near Bryce Canyon National Park. There are at least another half dozen other protected areas that are being targeted by the Trump administration for exploitation. For WFHB, I'm David Lyman.
And I'm Phil Casper. We love to hear from our listeners. Contact us about stories we've aired or if you have ideas for future stories. Please send emails to earth@wfhb.org.
This is Get Out and Hike, and my name is Jan Walker. This week I'll be talking to Cynthia Brubaker about her recent hike at the Amy Weingartner Brannigan Peninsula Preserve, which is a part of the Sycamore Land Trust properties. So, Cindy, tell us about your hike.
So I was prepared for this up and down mile-long hike with my dog. So we took off on the short path from the parking lot, and after a short while, we were on an old roadbed, which was a beautiful path to walk on because it's nice and wide. It did go up and down, but very soon you could see the water on both the left side and the right side through the trees, which was just a beautiful sight, and the sun was perfect, the weather was perfect. It made for a great, great hiking day and a great place to hike. And as I was walking along the shore, after a while I noticed that the rock had turned into geodes, and they were everywhere, tiny little geodes, the likes of which I'd never seen, with very interesting and unusual patterns on them. And coming back, I noticed that on the east side of the peninsula, the shore was also very interesting, and thought, another time I'd like to come back and explore that shore. In fact, I thought that this hike was so interesting and wonderful and fun that I could see myself coming back often in all different kinds of weather, even when it was snowy. And as I was walking up one of the hills, and I must say it was quite strenuous, some pretty steep ups and downs, so it did make for a good workout. One of the things I really liked about the hike is that there were lots of variety in the scenery, different kinds of trees, both cedar trees and pine trees, as well as deciduous trees. And the walkway, the path, the road was both gravelly and dirt. Some of the areas were more grassy. Some of the areas were more wooded. And I did walk down to the side of the water where it was rocky, and there were lots of sticks that I could throw to my dog to run out into the water and catch. I did return within 4 days for another hike on Sunday with a friend and experienced a little bit of that east shore and another lovely day. It was supposed to rain, but it didn't. It was just really, really windy. So I've now had two wonderful hiking experiences, and I recommend it to anybody. It's really a lovely place to walk.
Thank you, Cindy. And this is Jan Walker for Get Out and Hike.
In today's Eco Report feature, Rebecca Mueller interviews Kathy Green, a citizen advocate for the protection of Low Gap Wilderness Area from logging. Kathy recently backpacked the length of the Tecumseh Trail to view past and future logging areas.
This is Rebecca Mueller for Eco Report. This morning I'm going to interview Kathy Green. Kathy, could you introduce a little bit of what you've been up to lately regarding the Tecumseh Trail?
Yes, Rebecca. My name, like you said, is Kathy Green. I'm a sixth-generation Monroe Countyan, and I live in the woods here nearby, and I'm surrounded by the state forest. And the reason I wanted to come talk to you today is because I have recently backpacked the Tecumseh Trail for the second time, and I'm really interested in people understanding how beautiful a trail it is, but also how devastated the logging has been and how much proposed logging there is. So I'm really concerned about that. I recently retired and I got back into backpacking. I went on the Tecumseh and met several friends 2 years ago and then decided to backpack it. And it was the first time I'd ended up backpacking part of it alone, and it was very inspiring. It's a 42-mile hike that begins in northwestern Morgan Monroe State Forest, so it's right north of here. It's really close, and it's encompasses all the way around Yellowwood Lake and goes through to almost Lake Monroe and even a little bit further. So it's 42 miles of beautiful, pristine woodland, except the areas that are logged or proposed to be logged. And it's some of the most pristine woodland areas that we have here in Indiana.
Kathy, could you tell us a little bit about the current risk of logging for the trail? I understand that was proposed some time ago now. What is the status of that situation?
The backcountry area, I think, is what you're referring to in the low gap area. That's an area that was actually designated and built a long time ago. And the trail itself was built in 98 to 2002. And this area in the backcountry area has not been logged since it was originally logged. So it was designated as an area to be kept like wilderness. And in fact, the governors have protected it from being logged. And I have a quote here that I'd like to read to you just because it says so importantly how the DNR had wanted to keep this area protected. And it states in their hiking trails at Monroe, Morgan Monroe State Forest flyer, the backcountry area, and this is quote, the backcountry area was created in 1981 for those seeking a wilderness experience similar to that on federal properties. Although hunting and single tree harvesting are permitted, the area contains 2,700 contiguous acres free of developed roads. To enhance the wilderness experience for all visitors, users are asked to observe the philosophy of disturbing as little as possible in the natural woodland ecosystem, end quote.
Okay, so why do you think now logging is being proposed for this area?
Well, I think the idea behind it is that they want to log extensively as they have been over 400% since the early 200s or 2000s. And in my mind, they're logging anything they can access. And I'm not opposed to logging, but this logging has taken on a new dimension in that they're clear-cutting areas. And you walk through these areas and it looks like a bomb has gone off. And they're leaving behind huge piles of logs that just look like boneyards. And I believe they're doing this because they believe they're managing the forest.
And I understand there are several groups here locally and then some local chapters of national groups that are working to stop this proposed logging. Could you talk about your connection? Who are you linked in with in your advocacy and your awareness raising about this?
Well, locally, there's Mind the Gap, and they are really interested in protecting the Tecumseh Trail and the corridor that surrounds it because it makes more sense to try to move the logging than move the trail, which has been rerouted several times. And they are accessible on Mind the Gap, Mind the Low Gap on Facebook, and they are also going out and taking hikes with the Sierra Club to try to make it more accessible for people to see, because I don't think many people have a clue of how much logging there is. There's almost 30 different areas that have been logged or proposed to be logged in this 42-mile area. And the other people, the Indiana Forest Alliance, has also been doing work towards trying to protect this as they did Crown Hill Cemetery. And I think folks are getting rallied around them as well. They have tried to get legislation passed as the DNR has said that they wanted to protect 10% of the area and as a wilderness or old growth forest. And they're not doing that or they won't accept that as part of the law.
So Kathy, since you recently walked the trail, could you tell us what was it like this time? Did you see new logging? Did you see anything that surprised you?
The beginning of the trail actually has been diverted because of a trail that the DNR has put through. So you actually start on a gravel road that's soon to be paved. That's a multi-use trail.
And did you go north to south or south to north?
I went from north to south. And that's where it starts up by the a DNR area where they have their new office building they're putting in. And then soon thereafter, you know, you get into this beautiful wilderness area, and then you get to the area that's been diverted on Lanham Ridge. But before that, there's the low gap area that has not been logged. However, it goes up for bidding on November 7th. And that means that the trees have been marked. Blue dots are everywhere. And these 200-year-old trees are planning on being logged, which means they're going to be improving, quote-unquote, the logging road, which will increase the amount of development and gravel. So these areas will be extremely changed forever. And hiking on logging roads that have been graveled is really a lot more jarring. And it's just so unappealing. And that area is going to be logged as soon as they can. The Lanham Ridge area is really and been already diverted. They're logging extensively since last year, or early this year, rather, and they have graveled that road extensively. The route that they've rerouted the trail is over steep ravines. I've never fallen before like this when I was walking it the other day. They've got these saplings that they haven't cut off completely, and they were covered with leaves, and I went flying and almost, you know, downhill head first and was really lucky. And they've also been logging areas around Lake Yellowwood, which is extensively been logged up on the Skirsifat west of the lake as well. And now they're getting to the northern part of the lake. And when I was there, the DNR had trucks there that was logging loaded, and they said that they were clearing up some fall down or blow down areas. But also the Patty's Garden Ridge is being logged, and that's one of the more beautiful areas as well. So it doesn't seem like any of it is protected anymore. Down Crooked Creek, they've done it as well. And just all along, there's proposed logging. You can see the dots. And the amount of logging since 2 years ago is extensive. I marked over 30 places that have been logged or are going to be logged on this map that I've created with the help of the Mind the Gap. I've visited with the governor's staff, and, you know, they are listening. They are getting calls from us and the people that support it and your representatives. It's important to speak your mind if you feel strongly about an area. I also think that hiking it is a great idea. Join the Facebook page of Mind the Low Gap and just be vocal. Trees can't talk, and I am one of the people that are trying to motivate others to look at the beauty surrounding them and appreciate it and save it for our next generations and become healthier Hoosiers and get out there and hike.
Thank you so very much, Kathy. Again, this is Kathy Green, and I'm Rebecca Mueller for Eco Report.
Thank you very much, Rebecca.
Are you an environmental activist, an expert on a particular issue of environmental concern? A concerned citizen interested in learning more about local and national environmental issues? EcoReport is seeking volunteer reporters to contribute short headline news stories as well as feature interviews. We provide all the technical training you'll need. For more information, email us at earth@wfhb.org or call 812-323-1200.
And now it's time for In Nature, a segment focusing on the flora and fauna of South Central Indiana.
This is In Nature.
Eastern box turtles, or Terrapina carolina carolina, were in the recent past a common terrestrial turtle in the eastern United States. However, now this species is considered of special concern because of loss of habitat and because these turtles are often sold in the pet trade. It is against the law in Indiana to take a turtle from the wild. Eastern box turtles prefer moist, deciduous, or mixed bottomland forests, and use shallow streams to cool off during warm weather. If the weather is particularly hot, the turtles will also submerge themselves in wet mud. Box turtles have a hinge on the bottom shell or plastron and have a high-domed upper shell or carapace. They can pull their heads and limbs into their shell and tightly close it, foiling predators. Their shell coloration is brown, with a pattern of yellowish or orange radiating lines or spots. The males have red eyes and a plastron that is concave, allowing him purchase when he climbs on top of the female to inseminate her. The female has brown eyes and a flat plastron. Box turtles can live for 50 to 100 years and do not breed until they are about 10 years old. Once inseminated, the female can store viable sperm for up to 4 days. She lays her eggs in the soil from mid-May to early June, and the sun incubates them. A variety of predators feast on the eggs, adding to their vulnerability. Young turtles are unable to close the hinge of their shells until they are 4 or 5 years old. Eastern box turtles are omnivorous, eating fruit, earthworms, slugs, small insects, rotting meat, mushrooms, flowers, and berries. Because of their low metabolism, if food is not available, they can retreat into their shells and can wait until conditions are more favorable. Box turtles overwinter by digging into the soil, going deeper as the winter progresses.
You've been listening to In Nature.
And now for our weekly community events calendar. The Indiana Forest Alliance is having a member meeting from 2:30 to 5 p.m. on Saturday, November 4th. A potluck, dance, and bonfire will follow the meeting. Hear about IFA's latest forest-saving strategies around the state, then dig into a tasty potluck dinner and take a spin on the dance floor. The event is taking place at the Lazy Black Bear in Paoli, Indiana. If you plan to attend, please bring a dish to share at the potluck. Call 317-602-3692 for more information and directions.
There will be an Allen's Creek Fossil Beds hike at Allen's Creek State Recreation Area on Monroe Lake on Sunday, November 5th from 1:30 to 4:30 p.m. The limestone shoreline around the point of Allen's Creek is so dense with fossils that it is hard to find a, quote, plain rock. The fossil beds are filled with crinoids and corals interspersed with geodes, all remnants of the shallow sea that once covered Indiana. The round-trip hike distance is about 4 miles over moderate terrain. The event is free but requires advance registration. Call 812-837-9967 for more information.
On Tuesday, November 7th, the IU Cinema will present the documentary film Black from 7 to 8 p.m. The movie Black investigates water pollution in Taiwan and its consequences for both the environment and poor communities who rely on contaminated crops to live. A lecture will follow the film. The event is free but ticketed.
Spring Mill State Park will have an early bird hike on Saturday, November 11th from 8 to 9 a.m. What sparrows are spending the winter in the field? Meet Wyatt in the pool parking lot dressed for wind, rain, weeds, and birding to learn about the birds in the winter.
And finally, there will be a Wolf Cave hike at McCormick's Creek State Park on Saturday, November 11th from 3 to 4:30 p.m. Take Trail 5 through the Wolf Cave Nature Preserve with a park interpreter and see the unique geologic features of McCormick's Creek. Bring a flashlight or headlamp if you want to explore the cave. Meet at the Wolf Cave parking lot.
And that wraps up our show for this week. Eco Report is brought to you in part by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
This week's news stories were written by Linda Green, Norm Holy, Rebecca Mueller, and Wes Martin. Rebecca Mueller produced our feature. Rebecca Mueller and Andrew Brown edited the script. Juliana Daly compiled our events calendar. Our engineer is Kirsten Payton. Producer is Rebecca Mueller. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, I'm David Lyman.
And I'm Phil Casper. Join us on Thursdays at 11:30 a.m. before Democracy Now! And on Fridays at 5 p.m. before Kiteline for our weekly radio rundown of ecological news. Until then, Eco Report encourages you to take direct action to defend the Earth.
You've been listening to the Eco Report,
a volunteer-powered production of Community Radio WFHB
in Bloomington, Indiana.
Available for download and podcast at news.wfhb.org.
Eco Report is your independent, ecologically inspired news source
for South Central Indiana,
bringing you news that the Earth wants you to hear.
Send your comments, suggestions, and story ideas
directly to the Eco Report staff.
The email address is
earth@wfhb.org.
That's earth@wfhb.org.